Welcome to this episode of Reddit Guy. The subreddit we will listen to today is called r/nosleep. Our first post of this episode comes from Real Human Being Yes, and it's titled I'm showing up in the background of people's photos, and I think it's going to kill me. It's deafening sometimes. Smile. A young woman had yelled just moments ago, watching over her family, sprawled out gently in the grass. The sun had flared as she'd hit the capture button, and a frown flooded her features. Lifting up the camera, expecting to have to delete the image, her infectious grin returned. There was her photo, exactly as it should be. She didn't notice the man standing in the background. Not for a good while yet. It's hard to hear myself think, but, then again, maybe that's a good thing. Cheese. A group of kindergartners cheered on their last day. A moment of elation, for there was time, now, for play. A time set aside for fun, games, and snacks. As soon as they were given the signal, they scurried away like a pack of mice, breaking into their individual groups. The photographer was smiling as well. Who doesn't share the giddy happiness that children generate with their laughter? He took his camera from around his neck to admire his work. As he flicked through the images, his hand spasmed, and he dropped the machine on the ground. Cursing, he reached for it, and begged to some higher power that his lens hadn't cracked. He'd held it safe for so long. It was distraction enough that the photo, and the man standing haphazardly in the bushes, was forgotten. Thinking makes it worse, because, when I think, I remember when I found out. I remember the post on some far-fetched social media site that has torn me apart. I wish it would end. Laying back on her bed, a person had picked up her phone, red in the face and close to tears. Why did they have to lose him? He was all they had. Swiping through her gallery, she reminisced. He had been a great person. He didn't deserve what had happened to him. Then she had froze, squinting at one of the photos. Who was that? There was someone in the background of one of her images. Thankful for a brief distraction from her mind, though strange it may be, she looked through some more of her photos, noticing the person in multiple other frames. She decided, after becoming concerned, to post it somewhere. Who the hell is in the back of all my photos? Is anyone else seeing this, or am I going mad? I can tell you who. Anyone could. It's me. My face is plastered across every social media site there is. My name, nowhere to be found. Even I'm starting to forget it. Honestly, that scares me a little. I'm turning up in places that I've never been, and every time I do, the snick of a camera rings through my mind. It just keeps getting louder. Louder, louder. It doesn't stop. God help me, it won't fucking stop. The last time I recall sleeping was when I passed out from exhaustion, and the photos that day had been with my eyes tightly shut. I just want it to end. Please, God, let it end. The next post from Mrs. Crystal XDR is titled I'm an over-the-road trucker, here to warn you. Do you ever wonder why some rest areas seem to randomly close for no reason? Okay, so you might not believe me, but I had to put the truth out there. I'm just a trucker, driving across the states, and let me tell you. I have seen some crazy shit. But so far nothing tops what I'm about to tell you. So being an OTR trucker, I see all kinds of rest areas multiple times. Have you ever noticed how some of them just seem to close for no reason? Have you ever seen the abandoned cars sometimes parked at these rest areas, and sometimes along the roadsides as well? I used to wonder about them myself, until one night I was running dangerously low on my drive time for the day. You see, we only get a 14-hour window, which includes a 30-minute break after driving 8 hours. Well, I was pushing my luck, trying to drive as far as I could because it was an 18-hour trip and I needed to get unloaded in the morning. As my last few minutes were ticking away, I spotted a rest area a few miles ahead of me on the map. Oh, thank God, I thought to myself, I can finally stop and get some rest. As I got about a half mile away, I noticed that they had put construction barrels in front of the entrance to the rest area. Shit, where am I supposed to go now? I thought. As I was passing by, I noticed that one car was parked by the building, and a lone semi-truck was parked in the back. Ah, they must have pulled past the exit and backed in. I can do that too. Feeling relieved, knowing I had a safe place to sleep for the night, I pulled past the exit and backed up into the truck's parking side. I noticed that the car was empty as I backed in. Oh well, they probably just went into the restroom. As I parked near the other truck, I noticed it appeared to be empty as well. In fact, the driver's side door was wide open. Intrigued but not too concerned, I finished parking. Thinking to myself, I should probably go inside and use the restroom before hitting the sack. I opened my door and started climbing out of my truck. Before I could step onto the ground, I felt an odd rumbling as my truck started to shake. I latched onto the side bar and started looking around. Indiana isn't known for earthquakes, so what the hell is going on? I noticed the ground moving near the tree line. Wait, no, it's not the ground that's moving, it's something just under the surface. I watched as it moved closer. I watched it move beneath the concrete towards my truck. What the fuck? I yelled as I jumped back into my seat and slammed my door. In the time it took me to do that, I saw that it was already under my door. The rumbling had stopped. Then I heard a loud cracking sound, then another and another. I stared down at the ground in horror, unable to believe or even comprehend what my own eyes were seeing. Withered, gnarled hands started bursting through the concrete and sliding up the driver's side of my truck. I panicked when I saw one grasping at my door handle. Letting out a scream, I quickly locked my doors. The hand curled into a fist and slammed the door's side, leaving a dent. I then heard a scream outside, and looked up to see a woman standing just outside of the main building staring at the arms. I yelled at her, "Get back in your car and lock your doors." She stood there in shock for a moment before turning tail and running towards her car. But the arms had already sunk back into the earth, and the rumbling began again. It was fast, so damn fast. She didn't stand a chance, because before she even made it halfway to her car, a long arm reached out and snatched her leg. She screamed and cried, beating at the arm desperately trying to break its hold on her. But it was too strong for her. I watched in terror as it began to drag her underground with it. Her terrified screams becoming ragged, then muffled as she sunk beneath the surface. Blood started to spray out of the hole left in the ground, then the rumbling started up again. And I watched it as it moved back towards the tree line and disappeared. I swear I'm not crazy, everything I'm telling you is real. It left no traces of its movement. I watched it cover the holes it had left. I watched the concrete and dirt settle perfectly as it was leaving. I took off like a bat out of hell, laws and regulations be damned. I don't know what that was, but I knew the police wouldn't believe a word of it. The problem is, I don't think that was the only one. I keep seeing abandoned cars and empty rest areas. I think there are multiple creatures, and I think they migrate between rest areas. I think I'm starting to see a pattern in its migration. I will update you as I learn more. But please, if you ever see an abandoned vehicle or a rest area with one side blocked off, stay away, or you very well might get snatched too. The next post from Alche Eland is titled Family Relations. I've got a surprise for Elena, my brother whispered into the phone. I sent our samples to the lab today, and soon we will find out about our ancestry. I was surprised. My brother's wife was suspicious of such ventures and refused to do a DNA test several times. As if he was reading my mind, my brother said, "It's okay. I just took a hair from her comb. She didn't have to do anything. I'm sure she'll file for divorce this time," I said, "but she will try to kill you first. You better be running now." My brother met his wife 5 years ago at a charity fundraiser. Elena organized and facilitated the event. She was a dazzlingly beautiful woman with unnaturally large, bright green eyes and fire-colored hair that never looked the same under different lighting. There was not a single man who wouldn't look at her passing by. However, she chose my brother. They got married a year later. Elena, unlike my brother, had a hot temper, and they often quarreled. It was always loud and scary. But all such quarrels would be followed by a truce full of love and respect. My brother has changed a lot during their marriage. He stopped playing sports, almost stopped going out with his friends. He lost weight and started growing hair. At the same time, he became very successful at work and got 2 promotions in a short time. In addition, he began to paint. No one could understand the meaning of the abstract, almost monstrous forms of his paintings. He tastefully hung them around their house but didn't seek to show them to visitors. "It's just my little hobby," he said with a weak smile. At this point, I started feeling the need to end up our conversation. "I'm going to the market tomorrow," I said. "Do you need anything besides tomatoes?" "No," my brother replied, "and please bring more than last time. You know how much she loves them." I couldn't imagine that these were the last words that I heard from my brother. The next day, I was unable to drive up to my brother's house. The street was barricaded. Police stood near the barriers, helping to walk out the neighbors. I could see my brother's house from where I was standing. It was covered with a protective tent with a biohazard sign on it. People in hazmat suits were swarming around doing something that looked like taking samples. "What happened? My family lives in this house, are they okay?" I yelled at the officer blocking my way. No commentaries, sir. Leave the area, or else the force will be applied. While they were walking me out, I noticed a press cameraman sitting on the lawn with blood on his face and a broken camera lying beside him. Other journalists were passing by being escorted by military men. My family was shocked. We tried to find out what happened and where my brother and his wife were for several weeks, but the government denied all our requests. They labeled the case a matter of a high secrecy and stated that disclosure of information is impossible. The DNA lab where my brother sent the samples stopped operating and couldn't be contacted as well. My mother suffered a cardiac arrest from being emotionally exhausted. One day, when I drove up to my brother's neighborhood looking to speak with someone again, I was surprised to find that all the barriers and servicemen around were gone. The house was not there either, just like if it had never existed. The bare spot on the lawn was the only sign of it. Almost 5 years have passed since then. I can't stop thinking about my brother, but I think more about his wife, Elena. About her unnaturally large, bright green eyes. About her fire-colored hair that never looked the same under different lighting. And about the night we spent together just a week before she disappeared. I finished another painting and hung it on the garage wall. There are almost no other places left in the house. When I paint, it stops chewing on my internals and rests. And I can rest too. The next post from All My Systems Are Nervous is titled I Catcalled a Woman I Shouldn't Have. Dot. Let's get one thing clear. I'm an asshole. I harass women with my friends and jeer at them. I've never once tipped at a strip club before, and I view women as less inferior than men. Yes, I'm one of those guys. I am aware I suck. The thing is, now I regret all of that, and I want to be a better person, but I don't know if it's too late. See, I catcalled a woman when I shouldn't have. And now I'm pretty sure my life is in danger. It started out like any other day. I was hanging with my friends, and some pretty women walked by. They started catcalling him, whistling, things like that, and I did the same, making kissy noises as they walked by. In response, they walked faster, but we kept calling after them until they were out of view. It was fun, you know, a way to get their attention and let them know they were pretty and that we wanted to have them as ours. Man, they sure are stuck-up bitches, my friend laughed, and I laughed along with him. Yeah, I know, right? Like, they're supposed to be grateful, you know? I responded, jabbing him in the ribs. Right. It was then that a particular woman caught my eye. She was standing alone at a street corner near a bus stop. I don't know if she was waiting for the bus, but I'd assume she was. I whistled, pointing to her. Look at that hottie. Damn, she's fine. Want me to call her or do you? I want to. Hey, sweetheart. She ignored me. Hey, I yelled, clapping my hands to get her attention, but all she was doing was simply staring at the ground. When I yelled a third time, however, her eyes snapped up to meet mine, and I jolted. Her eyes were all black. Her hair, also black and long, was covering most of her face, making her look similar to the Grudge. Her skin was pale as well. My friends seemed uneasy, but I, like the dumbass I am, kept going. Hey, you want to come back to mine? She didn't make a move, nor did she speak. She just kept staring with those dark, soulless eyes, and my friends had to physically pull me away, as they said I was leaning forward and about to walk to her. We ended up eating at a nearby restaurant, and when I looked at the spot again, the woman was gone. However, I couldn't get the feeling that I was being watched to stop. Eventually, we all went our separate ways. I was starting to feel like a massive douchebag for trying to shoot my shot and the fact that it didn't work. I now know that I was being a dumbass and that is, in fact, not the proper way to get a woman. It was around 10 at night, and I was walking home, and again, I got the feeling of being watched. I kept glancing behind me, but there was no one there. I think I saw someone duck behind a tree. I don't know if I'm imagining things or what. Well, turns out I wasn't. I got home, locked the door, took off my shoes, and went to the bathroom to wash my hands. I had just turned on the light and started washing my hands when I looked up at the mirror, and there she was, standing behind me and staring with that awful stare of hers. I screamed, blinked, and then she was gone once more. I figured I was just paranoid. I ended up taking off my clothes to shower, got in the shower, and closed my eyes, humming a song as I washed my hair. I could have sworn I kept hearing footsteps and breathing, though, and when I was done washing everything, I opened the curtain and my eyes, and there she was again, standing there and staring at me through the doorway. I think I screamed. I don't remember, but what I do remember is getting out of the shower and almost slipping, slamming the door, and locking it. I don't know if she's still out there. I think she is. I haven't heard any movement, but I'm not taking chances. I still have my phone, it's at 78% right now, but I don't know what she wants from me. I already spoke and said I was sorry and I'd try to be better, and there was no response, but I can still hear her breathing and see her shadow, and she hasn't moved. An hour ago, all the lights in my apartment went out and I've been hiding in the shower with the curtain closed since. I can hear the doorknob rattling. I don't know if she can get in even if it's locked if she was able to get into my place of living without me noticing. I swear I hear her breathing from inside the room, but I don't know if it's from my paranoia or not. I don't know what to do. I've tried apologizing, saying I'll be better, I won't do it again. She doesn't move at all. I can still feel her waiting. What the hell do I do? The next post from Righting My Wrong is titled Bed and Breakfast. So, what do you think it'll be? Beth ended a conversation I clearly hadn't been paying attention to. I grasped at straws for the right answer, the humming of my car cutting through the silence that followed. Beth only laughed, shaking her head in that amused way she did when I had done something anyone else would have been frustrated by, breakfast, sweetness. What do you think they'll serve for breakfast? Okay, now I was caught up. We had booked a room at the cheapest motel we could find, and Beth was the one to find out that they served a complimentary breakfast sure to leave you wanting more. Honestly, for the price of the room, we'll be lucky to get a single stale Cheerio. I snorted, pulling into the Hideaway Inn. Beth ruffled my hair playfully before she clambered out, stretching her long legs, or, come on, don't be so grumpy. She smiled, because she found the joy in everything. We'd started dating 3 years ago when she was practically drooling over my pie at some backwards diner, making the absolutely most pitiful puppy dog eyes until I silently slid over half. And now here we were, many meals after the fact, with a ring box burning a hole in my pocket and the sweetest woman I had ever met complimenting every facet of this shitty motel. I grabbed our luggage, ignoring her commands to let her carry something, and walked up to the dirty front desk, requesting the keys to room 13 from just about the most bored kid I'd ever seen in my life. And yeah, our room wasn't much better. There were mysterious stains on the carpet and blankets, the yellowed walls reeking of cigarettes, and something in the air made my eyes water. My throat closed up like it refused to accept any of the oxygen, and I had to cough to clear my airway. Oh, no. Are you okay? Beth asked, quickly running over to check on me the second she saw things were amiss. I'm fine, I assured, because that concern instantly took precedence over my own discomfort. Let's just grab some shut-eye. Sooner we wake up, sooner we can leave. I tore the scratchy, smeared blankets from my bed and changed into my pajamas, tugging Beth down with me, love you. I murmured into her neck as she reached out to flick the lights off, curling into my embrace. It took me almost too long to fall asleep, and I had just about the worst nightmares when I finally did. My entire body ached, teeth falling out of my mouth to be replaced by jagged fangs. I could almost make out the sound of Beth screaming and pleading for mercy as I sank sharp claws into her supple flesh, rending muscle from bone and crunching down to get at the sweet marrow inside. She stopped gurgling when I ripped out her throat, and still I kept ripping and tearing and eating and fuck. When she was nothing more than a mass of unidentifiable meat and sludge, the dream slowly faded into blackness. I woke up in a room I didn't recognize. The walls and floor were perfectly white, and the only scent in the air was fabric softener, my soft blankets drawn up under my chin. I was so confused that I ran outside, checking to see that yes, I was still in room 13, and now I had even more questions than answers. I was disturbed by the bellboy wheeling a tray up to me, pardon the interruption, but we received an order for breakfast. He said in a gentle voice, as if speaking to a spooked animal. Thanks. I grabbed the plate and returned inside, calling out for Beth. She didn't answer, but I thought, Jesus, I don't know what I thought, but I guess I persuaded myself that she'd placed the order and gone for a walk. I pulled off the cloche, and a laugh was startled out of me when I saw the pie sitting there, like a note from Beth. And when I took a bite, my mouth exploded with flavors, all sweet and sour and familiar. I couldn't stop eating, even when tears started to roll down my cheeks, and the world was a blurry mess by the time I'd finished. They never found her. Beth, I mean, I was the main suspect of foul play, but they couldn't find any evidence tying her disappearance to me, especially not when I was so willing to help the police in any way I could. As for me, I tried to move on, although I barely eat anymore. That dessert, after indulging myself, everything else tasted like ash in my mouth. And maybe that's why I'm telling you, because I'm fighting it so hard, and I'm so scared of what will happen, but, God forgive me, I want to go back. No, I need to go back, to have one last meal. The next post from Unhappy Possession 57 is titled I Repossess Souls for the Devil. Please repay your debts. Well, I guess debt is putting it a little too lightly. Covenant might be a better term. I have had this job for around 70 years now, and in that time, I have enforced pretty much every contract imaginable. Most of these deals focus on power, wealth or love in exchange for 70 years of the soul in the afterlife. Though there are a few oddballs here and there. One time I had a guy who signed his soul away for a mere $10,000. He lost most of it gambling anyway. It might seem like a predatory business, yet it is the people who reach out to us in their quest to obtain some material want. There is a list of acceptable rituals scattered through most of the globe and is mentioned in almost all religions. Though I am not at liberty to share, the rituals are straightforward and can be performed without much preparation. Once a ritual is completed, someone from my department goes up and signs a deal with the interested party. They are, of course, told what the deal entails. Eternal damnation, 70 years of work in the depths of hell, a brief stint in the lake of fire at the end, etc. There is also a cool montage which goes over previous testimonies, which I really like, though it is hard to make words out over the screaming. A good amount of people back out at this step, and understandably so. Yet, you'd be surprised at how many people still proceed in hopes of ensuring that their time on earth is spent in opulence. I have met people from all walks of life, politicians seem to be popular, a very large number of musicians and scholars, and, unsurprisingly, people who work in finance. There are some sad cases too, mostly people pursuing unrequited love or those who want their dead family members back. Breaks my heart every time I see them signing that contract. My job focuses on repossessing those who break this covenant, which is most of the population. Our contracts are ironclad, yet people find religion, perform elaborate ceremonies, or donate huge amounts of money in hopes that God will save their souls. They seem assured that He will be there at the end. But they always run into me. I patiently wait at the entrance of the white tunnel once I receive word that a covenant is going to be broken. They see me and try to make a run for it, hoping that the white tunnel will be a wormhole into heaven, but they are disappointed when I catch them and bring them down with me. As expected, there is a lot of remorse on the journey down. I didn't know what I was doing, but I thought God would be here to save me. Please, my family is waiting for me up there. I try my best to be sympathetic, but after doing this for so long I have become jaded and will usually nod while these poor souls cry out for salvation. The ones who agree and hold up their bargain of the covenant are tortured for a considerably less time. Some of them even get to hold low-ranking gigs of torturing other souls. Though most of them just scream and cry in pain for their time, understandably so, it gets intensely hot and violent down there. Being surrounded by the worst that humanity has to offer doesn't help either. Having said that, there is a sliver of hope of salvation at the end, and that keeps most people going. A special place in hell, that is where most of the defectors go. There are no descriptions that do it justice, but I have heard that torture, grief, and hurt are pretty much the norm 24 hours of the day, if you can even comprehend hours down there. Most souls cry in agony for a very long time. Most of them have been screaming for so long that they don't even remember what they did to end up there in the first place. No one really knows what goes on down there. My colleagues often talk about large animals, rivers of fire, and eternal darkness. Any description of hell you have heard, I assume has happened here. Only a few souls have ever made it out of here, handpicked by the devil to do his bidding. All of that to say, don't ever sign your soul away, and if you do, don't break the covenant. I don't look forward to meeting you. Today's last post from Quirky Breakfast 574 is titled I'd Rather Be Haunted by My Dog. My dog died in July. Kevin, ours wasn't some long love story. I didn't get her as a child, beaming on Christmas morning. No, she followed me home one day, already an old girl with a limp. I thought she was a boy, because she was matted and scraggly, so I named her Kevin. I followed all the steps to make sure she wasn't lost, got her fixed, and eventually I was allowed to adopt her. She changed my life immediately, mostly by forcing me on a schedule, but she also had this innate way of knowing when something was wrong, and being there to comfort me. Sleeping under the covers was never an option for her, and she got too hot in the bed. Combined with her later illness, this meant she primarily slept on the floor, in a bed I made. It had a ramp, and was elevated just enough that I could reach down and pet her at night. Remember how I said she somehow knew when I needed her? When I was really stressed, I'd feel her pull at the blankets on the edge of the bed. Only when I put my hand down for her to sniff or mash with her nose would she sometimes allow me to curl away and sleep. Other times she would lick my fingers, the little warm kisses that I always took as nervousness. Or even, rarely, nibbling them just enough to startle me into coming back into the real world. When COVID hit, it was like my own fucked up Christmas miracle. Kevin had just gotten diagnosed with bone cancer, and this meant I'd be able to spend more time with her after being moved online at work. We spent months doing whatever she wanted, chasing things, swimming, laying in the warm sun, and going to the pet store. When her body slowed and it was time, we said goodbye floating in the pool, her in my arms. I can still see the way her long brown fur, long since matted and now pristine, circled her head like a halo. She looked so beautiful. Life moved on, but without my little monster I was suddenly aware of just how vulnerable I was. Without her, I was simply a young, single girl living alone, airheaded enough to spout my plans and locations out to strangers. You see, my girl was also mean as hell, and the whole town knew it. Which made me kind of untouchable, and I spent a good few years feeling pretty damn invincible because of her. So when the loneliness hit, so did the subtle fear that only comes from feeling truly exposed. I don't know how long I was in the hole, but it was at least a couple of weeks when I felt her presence. Nothing, and then, she was there. At first I thought I was crazy. Without her, I didn't think I was depressed per se, but I definitely wasn't as motivated as I used to be. Still, the thought of my dog coming to comfort me from beyond the grave was strangely comforting. I acknowledged that I was either crazy, severely ill, both, or drugged, and decided to embrace it. Still, feeling her breath sent automatic shivers down my spine. There were two major things wrong, aside from the obvious, that my girl was dead. The first was that my girl was, well, a girl. I could recognize my girl's soft exhalation against my knuckles in my sleep. This was not only distinctly not my girl, but I could tell by the heavy weight of the air and the way it put pressure against my tightening fist that it wasn't a dog at all. Right before I squeezed my eyes shut, instinctively pulling back my hand under the covers, I peeked. Kneeling on all fours in the spot my dog used to lay, open mouth, wide tongue and nose mere centimeters away from my hand, was a man. Wearing a gray bodysuit, with cheap white patchy circles, faded, worn and rubbed off in places midway. His face was covered in the same material, with his face exposed. But the worst part was that over his head, hanging crudely by some clothes hanger spun together, was a makeshift halo. And whatever material it was from, it was a disgusting, matted brown. I'm not sure if it's the fact that I was so distracted by the suit, the halo, or the fact that someone was in my house, my bedroom, my dog's bed, but his face was almost nothing except his eyes and his teeth, a giant, gleeful face, covered in scraggly beard, sweat, drool, and something distinctly sticky. I laid for what felt like days in the dark, but my phone said it was only 39 minutes. The entire time I could hear him. It. Breathing. It's been hours now. Real hours. I can still hear it out there. It hopped up on the bottom of the bed not too long ago. I screamed. It was a whole mess. I hoped that maybe it would fall asleep, but every time I readjust I can feel the bed shake and I know it's there again. Right above the covers. I can feel the warmth of its breath seeping through and it's making my face hot. I'm not sure what to do. I obviously can't call the police since someone is in my bed. But he knows I'm typing. He has too, so why doesn't he care? What does he want? What do I do?